State or National Banking Conference that Eric Cook doesn't speak at, it's probably because he couldn't find time on his calendar to present. I've known about Eric for many years and was thrilled to meet him in 2018 in Madison at the Graduate School of Banking, where we both serve on the faculty. Now, more importantly, Eric is a ubiquitous presence on today's digital marketing scene in banking. He's a former community banker, and for the past decade, he's focused his efforts as a digital strategist. He's an award-winning web designer for the world's largest digital agency, WSI. He's also contributed to the original and now second edition in three languages of the book Digital Minds, 12 Things Every Business Needs to Know About Digital Marketing. Eric is also online. He's the co-creator of a weekly webinar show, Free Webinar Wednesdays, and the founder of the webinar-based series, the Banker Education Series. One of the best things I like about Eric is he loves dogs. He's got two amazing golden retrievers, and if you call him, it's not out of the realm of possibility that they'll want to be on the conference call with you. So cool. We recently sat down with Eric for a 10-minute discussion of content sharing for community bankers. You can't cover this in 10 minutes, but it's well worth the listen. It's a practical, idea-filled, and fast-moving program, and here is our 10 minutes with Eric Cook.
Well, thanks, Jack. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you on your 10 minutes with series and chat about the whole concept of content and how community bankers could or should be leveraging it to help grow not just their bank, but build credibility, subject matter expertise. One of the things that my father told me as a community banker way back in the day when I decided to join the business was people will choose to bank with you because you are their banker, not just because you work at the bank. And sharing content in the olden days was talking about things, answering questions, sharing information at Rotary meetings and other sorts of events. Now in the digital world, that content sharing and distribution of knowledge needs to be taken care of through an electronic purpose. And so I'm excited that you're giving us an opportunity to chat about that today and reach so many folks that I know that you're very well connected with. So here's a little blurb about myself. Feel free to tweet up at me at the Eric Cook handle there. But I was a banker. I sometimes refer to myself as a recovering banker of 15 years. And I left the world of banking in 2007 to pursue a life of digital marketing and basically playing on the internet, but helping community banks, financial institutions, and small businesses really understand what's going on in the world of digital. So part of that process involved me going to the banking school up in GSB, Madison, where we were both on faculty, and I attended that program as a banker, and now I'm back there as bank school faculty in addition to many other areas. So I like to think that I'm practicing what I preach as far as producing content, sharing information, and I meet bankers all over the country that know so much about not just banking, but businesses and home ownership and financial planning and wealth management and preparing for your future. And they just need to be encouraged and kind of trained on how to take that content and share it with the rest of the world. So there's more blurbs in there about myself. You can read through. The other thing that I would like to draw everybody's attention to is as part of the digital agency network that I am a part of called WSI, we've actually written a book. Actually, this is the second one on digital marketing. It's available as a free download on Kindle, and would encourage anybody out there to snag that, really 12 elements of a digital strategy. And certainly content plays a role in many of those. And so as part of our, I guess, thought process around a digital roadmap, you'll find in the book a number of different avenues, and you're close to the Chicago area, so I can use this analogy and it will ring true to you, but small town Marshall boy here in Michigan went to Chicago the first time and needed to get downtown and went to the L and saw a very convoluted, strange looking map of the trains and was very confused and intimidated until some very kind woman from Chicago came up and said, honey, you look petrified. And I said, well, I just need to get downtown. I have no idea what I'm doing here. And so that is oftentimes the look that I get when I talk to bankers about a digital strategy, and they feel that there's so many different things that they can do. Certainly content plays its role in most of these areas. But what she shared with me and what I think helps digest this roadmap or this subway map or this train map, whatever we want to call it, is really focus on where you wanted to go, block everything else out. And I needed to get to Michigan Avenue to save my credit card and rescue it from my wife's hands. So I was told, you know, well, you need to get here, do one transfer, and then get off on this exit or get off on this stop. But once you understand the whole concept, then you've got the whole city to explore. You could go check out the zoo up in Lincoln Park. You could go over to the museums. You could go to Navy Pier and just look at all the different things that you could do. So as we talk about content playing a role, we need to figure out what that role is within the organization, within the bank. So is that content, you know, are you looking to share information out through social media channels? Are you looking to build credibility for your website and help from an SEO perspective? Are you looking to generate inbound marketing so that you're becoming a subject matter expert in home finance or small business or SBA? And then making sure that you tie in things like analytics, or do you need to pay to promote some of that and distribute it out to even a broader audience? So there's a lot of areas that a digital strategy comes to play. And I think content is really at the heart of a lot of this. The challenge oftentimes with content is cutting through the clutter can be a very difficult thing, and you have to get creative and think, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, more like a publisher or maybe even an entertainer of sorts. And so I realize using a Kentucky Fried Chicken example in a banking related discussion might be a little bit of a stretch. But this is one of the areas that I think is a good example of a content strategy using some creative ways of structuring information that helps to break. And for those of you that are familiar with Twitter, this is KFC's Twitter page. And usually there's a certain law of reciprocity where if you have a Twitter account and people are following you, you will follow them back. And so you can see that KFC is the time of the screenshot had a little over 1.3 million followers, yet they were only following 11 other Twitter accounts. And so one of the things that when this was discovered last year kind of made the news and cut through the clutter because it got KFC on the radar screen for a lot of folks that wouldn't have normally been talking about KFC is people dug in and said, well, why are they only following 11 accounts? Who are they actually following? And Jack, I'm going to have you kind of go off mute here because I'm going to ask you a question in just a second. But when you look at who they're following, the first five individuals that they're following are these ladies. And I'm wondering if you happen to recognize who these ladies might be, what their association or maybe their affiliation of one another is, if there's any correlation between them. Recognizing anything?
Yeah, they're all Spice Girls.
They're all Spice Girls. I'm impressed that you know that. I was gonna tease you, but you nailed it. So they're all Spice Girls. And then you look at the next six individuals that make up the full 11. What do you notice about these guys?
Well, Herb Alpert. Oh, they're all Herbs.
Right. So that means Kentucky Fried Chicken is following 11 herbs and spices.
Oh, I love that.
Ba-dum-bum. So this is one example of leveraging content creatively. Now, this isn't a blog post. This isn't a video. This isn't an article that you published out to LinkedIn. But what this is, it's an interesting way to structure something. And then people write blogs about this. So, my gosh, you wouldn't believe what Kentucky Fried Chicken is doing. And everybody's talking about them. And I just wanted to set the stage for thinking outside of the box and doing something, because in most instances, when I share this during a conference or a convention, and then I get together with folks afterwards and we're at the cocktail party, I'll hear people mention this again and KFC comes up in conversation. in an instance where they normally wouldn't be talked about. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily driving bankers to eat more fried chicken, but it certainly has occupied about 3 or 4 minutes of our time. And those folks that are going to pay attention to this session might be talking about it and share the story. But just thinking of creative ways that you can get outside of the box, share something a little interestingly that maybe people wouldn't expect. But it was interesting because I could hear it in your voice when the light bulb went off. And then you kind of put the two and two together of herbs and spices. So thank you for playing along. I appreciate that. So we are here to talk about content. And they say in the world of real estate, the three most important things in real estate are location, location, location. And in the world of digital, the three most important things are content, content, content. It's the information that you're sharing, the story that you're telling, the video that you're posting. But more importantly, while content certainly is king and we need to start thinking about being a publisher, so writing stories instead of just trying to sell a bank product or service or regurgitate our checking account as a $300 minimum balance with a $5 fall below fee and it comes with a free debit card and free online banking. Ho-hum. Tell the story around why your checking account is better. Give examples of people that have used your account and the convenience. And you know, they say sometimes you sell the sizzle, not the steak. But as important as content is in the entire process, there's another component around this that also rings true as a happily married man, not nearly as long as yourself, but 21 years, is content is king, but the engagement is queen, and she holds the keys to the castle. And so while we're thinking about sharing content and putting that information out there and educating the public and helping to let people know information that they're seeking, you also want to make sure that you don't miss an opportunity for engagement, where if you post something and somebody makes a comment or they share something or they like it, it's not that you have to necessarily be that person that always has to get the last word. But you really want to make sure that when people are engaging and interacting with the information that you've shared, that they know that there's somebody else on the other end. And what I see oftentimes is people will go into LinkedIn and they'll find some information and they'll just post the link to the article. They won't even give any sort of a precursor as to why they shared the link, why they feel that it's beneficial, why somebody would be interested. And then if somebody comments on it that says, hey, Jack, that's a great article. Thanks for sharing. There's nobody else that does a follow-up. So it just seems like there's a robot behind the scenes pushing content out, but there's really none of that engagement. And we have to remember at the end of the day, to do this right, we want to position ourselves as that banker. There's a human on the other end, as opposed to just looking at this as a numbers game and how many articles can I post and share on a month over month basis and, you know, how many views can I get? You want that engagement, because when those conversations take place, that's when there's opportunities to build relationships. That's when there's opportunities to maybe turn those relationships into business opportunities, accounts, loans, and revenue for your institution. So hopefully that makes sense. The question that I often will get is, well, that's great, but you know, I'm not a blogger. I'm not a creative writer. You tell me to think like a publisher. You know, I'm a mortgage lender, or I'm a commercial banker, or, you know, I don't know where to get this. The good news is there's a lot of sources for content that either already exist within your institution or are just at a fingertip away when you get out to the internet. And we'll share some of those examples today of ways that you can go find some really great content and start putting some of that information out there to demonstrate subject matter expertise and understand really, you know, how your audience is engaging with you. So there's existing information that you've got in your bank, whether that's within the brains of the people that are already there working. My father was a community banker for 33 years, and I could sit down with him today if he was still a banker and say, what are the five best things that you love about helping somebody buy a house for the first time? And just let him talk. And when he talks, you could grab that information as audio, much like what you're doing here. You could put him on camera. You could bring in somebody from the local community college that might be a journalism major, and they could write an article or a series of blog posts. But you're not necessarily asking the question about what are the elements of a first-time home loan. but why do you enjoy helping people buy a house? What is it that you like? What are the challenges? And back when my father was a community banker, they didn't have the luxury of going on the internet and doing a lot of this kind of, you know, anonymous browsing. You had to actually sit down in front of a scary banker and ask questions and go, oh my gosh, I hope Charlie doesn't think that I'm stupid for asking this question, but I have no idea what an appraisal's for. And so being able to answer those questions as a trusted source of information is something that you still want to be able to do. You just need to understand that most people aren't going to take the time to come and sit in front of you and ask those questions. They're going to want to get that information online. So existing information that's out there, and then being able to repurpose that. So I mentioned, you know, there might be people that would be interested in a little Twitter stream of that info. There might be people that would want to watch a video or download it on an audio file and listen to it while they go for a walk or a run. So repurposing information and having it across multiple channels, multiple different times is totally fine, and don't feel like you're being repetitive. So just a lot of examples there that I could probably ramble on about, but you kind of get the idea. The last bullet point where we talk about the journey, though, I think is another important element that I want to make sure to spend a little time on. So if we use the concept of this mortgage customer, somebody that wants to know about a mortgage versus somebody that's already gotten three loans with you and they just want to get a cottage in Northern Michigan, the buyer's journey, regardless of what business or industry you're in, needs to be taken into consideration, because people are going to enter that sales funnel in different areas, different stages, and they're going to have different needs that they're going to expect answers to. And you want to be careful and cognizant of the fact that if somebody comes into that process and you're not aware of it, let's say that the customer that's already bought three homes, done several refinances, and wants an up north cottage, if I make them come through this decision stage where we go through awareness, consideration, and then decision, and at the very beginning, it's all about, well, this is what an appraisal is, and this is why we have title insurance, and here's what's going to happen when you submit your loan application. That individual that already knows that information is going to feel a little put off. It's going to be a waste of their time, because what do they want to know? Who's got the best rate? How quick can we close? Do you have services that you can provide up in Northern Michigan, or do I need to find a local lender up there? Those are basically the questions that they're going to ask, because they don't need to be educated and all that other stuff. If you flip that conversely and you take somebody that's been, you know, graduated from college, moved back home, or they're renting and they're interested in purchasing a home, they're the ones that show up in my father's office back in the day, all doughy-eyed and kind of wondering what's going on with this big process of buying a house and the largest financial decision that we'll ever make in our lifetime. And oh my gosh, this is so intimidating. They're going to want to know some of that information to ease them in. First, that they need to be educated. So you can see at that point, sharing information that you have to be comfortable with, not guaranteeing that they're going to go with you. I might put a white paper or share a blog post or put together a podcast series about how to become a homeowner for the first time and understand that somebody might go through that process and decide to go with the local credit union instead of me as a banker and get that loan. And they got all the education from me, but at the end of the day, that was the institution that they were most comfortable with. But if we don't do that, we'll never get an opportunity to make an impression. And so as they move through that awareness stage, and if you've done a good job of educating, these are the different types of programs, this is the type that, you know, these are the questions that you should be asking, here's the type of information that goes into a credit report and why it matters, eventually they'll move through that process, and it doesn't guarantee that all of those people are going to end up deciding to do business with you, but it's certainly going to increase the likelihood that folks are going to see you as a trusted source of information. When I think of social media and I think of content, I think of know me, like me, trust me. They need to first get to know who you are. They need to like what you're talking about, the fact that you're not trying to just sell them a loan and force them to do business, that you really want them to be an educated buyer. Then they'll trust you, and that increases the likelihood that you'll have an opportunity to do business with them. And so, again, there's no guarantee. Sounds like you had a question.
I do, a couple of them. And if you look at this slide, it's really interesting. And Mike, I had two questions. The first question is, if you think about a bank or an executive, as you mentioned, which is where my question is headed, thinking about, okay, I, as the bank president in your father's case, should I be posting content on social media? I think the content journey looks real similar to me. I, first of all, need to be aware as an executive that that content is a pretty good thing to do. I need to educate myself that content is where I need to go. Then I need to think about, okay, how do I do the content? That's the consideration stage, and the decision stage is to launch or not to launch. So my first question about this is, you talk to a lot of banks, Eric, and a lot of community banks, and some that are kind of small and some that are a little medium, some that are bigger. What are you finding as executives are starting to think more about this content journey? How are they starting to say, yeah, I need to be doing this?
Oh boy. The good news is the tides are changing. You know, if you had asked me that question, two or maybe even a year ago, I think there's still the perception, and I can rattle off the names of a couple of CEOs that jump into the top of my head right now that do an awesome job at this, but it's by far still very much a small club of individuals. But I think that the tides are changing. I think people are realizing that they want to be able to hear from you. They want to be able to see what's, you know, the concept of transparency and openness and approachability. One of the examples that jumps into my head is a tweet from many years ago, but Tim Marshall, CEO for Bank of Ann Arbor, I caught an example of a tweet that he responded directly back to a customer that was tweeting about opening an account at their new office in Saline, which has probably been open for a number of years now. And Tim responded back to that, specifically to Barb, who was, I believe, the customer's name, and started his tweet with, "You rock, Barb. Thanks for becoming a new customer of Bank of Ann Arbor at Saline's newest branch." And that example I love to give, especially to the executive level, because I can tell you, Barb would not have gone up to Tim at the grocery store and said, "Hey, Tim, I just opened an account at, you know, I put in $50 at your branch in Saline, and I just wanted to tell you," because bank CEOs are scary, they're intimidating, and let's face it, who would think that a CEO would really care about a $50? And I don't know how much she put in, but, you know, for argument's sake. But yet on social media, Tim was just as accessible as anybody else through Twitter. And he responded back. He acknowledged it. And imagine how many people she told that, "You wouldn't believe this. The president and CEO of the bank just tweeted back to me and thanked me for opening an account. And that's a bank with service. And oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe that." And I've been beating that drum for the last probably 4 years. And there's still the, you know, I hear people say, "Well, yeah, it's probably some, you know, college intern that's managing his Twitter account because Tim wouldn't say you rock." Well, I've met Tim. I know Tim. I consider Tim a personal friend. And I can tell you, you know, he did say that. And, you know, it's not being managed by some college intern that's farming it in, because social media will ferret that out very quickly and determine whether you're true and authentic or it's just being done to, you know, lip service. So I think more people are realizing that they need to do this. The hard part, and this is why I'm so excited that you're doing, you know, that you've asked me to be on, plus you're also talking about this in what you do, it's figuring out what to talk about. Okay, I finally figured out the awareness of, I need to do this. Now, how do I do this? And, you know, do I have to write the stuff myself? Can I use other people's content? Are there other people out there that are doing a really good job that I should follow and emulate and maybe just watch a little bit? You know, I think of Chris Nichols, who's a mutual friend of ours. I mean, he crushes it on LinkedIn, and the articles that he produces and the content, just spend some time looking at the information that he's producing and see, can you do a fraction of that just to get started? And then at the end of the day, it's up to you to determine, is your market ready for it? Do you have the audience that might be interested? Are you comfortable? And if you can't do it as an executive, at least acknowledge the fact that you need to empower your employees to be able to do this and give them the support from a resources perspective, from a compliance perspective, from an accessibility and a technology and a security perspective. So you may not be the executive that's the blogger and the you rock Barb Tim CEO type Twitter account, but at least you understand this is an important component in the decision-making process of all types of consumers and all types of industries in today's day and age.
Well, and Tim and the Bank of Ann Arbor are a perfect example based on what you said a little while ago, which is there are still very few CEOs and senior executives that are doing this. If you would, that would help you certainly stand out. Now, my second question is a more practical one. You mentioned, let's say that you go in and interview your dad or a bank president about getting a mortgage, and he says, well, here's five things you ought to think about, or it's a mortgage professional or whoever it is. What kind of software? So I want to take that content now, and I want to put it in an audio file. That's great. But I also want to put that in a text file. I want to write an article about this, but I don't have time to convert. Is there software out there that can do that job for you? I know there are, but yep. What have you found?
So I don't have a slide for this, but I will tell you it's three letters, Rev, R-E-V, actually six, because there's a .com at the end of it. But REV.com, Rev.com is a service that we've used for some of our clients. What they will do for $1 a minute, and there may be other providers out there that will do transcription less expensively, but Rev.com is a service that you can take an audio file, you can upload that audio file to Rev.com, and for $1 a minute, they will transcribe that for you and send you back a text file. And if you wanted to use that for closed captioning on a video because you wanted to post it directly to YouTube or Vimeo, you can even get that as an acceptable file format that you can upload directly into those video platforms and enable closed captioning for ADA and accessibility purposes. There's also a service out there that I've recommended called Fiverr, which is Fiverr.com. That is a global marketplace, and I like saying this in front of a live audience because I like seeing the reaction on people's faces when I say this. But Fiverr is a website where you would be surprised what people will do for you online for $5. Let that sink in for a little bit. But it is a global marketplace with very talented and very capable people from areas all over the world, many of whom reside in areas of the world with a much lower cost of living structure than we have here in the United States. But they still are very technically adept. They have access to technology. You can take video. We've done research. We've done other sorts of imagery and graphics work where we'll find somebody in Fiverr and we'll send them a project, and for maybe 10 or 15 bucks, they'll transcribe that, or they'll even write a blog post for you and they'll do that. So you can leverage the global economy that we now have access to thanks to this wonderful thing called the internet. You don't want to put customer data there, obviously, or do an export of your mortgage clients and have them do profitability calculations. But for public-based information, Fiverr is another very powerful platform that you can use that'll give you access to some pretty talented folks from around the world at a very inexpensive and economical price point.
Awesome. Very helpful, Eric. Yep.
Yeah. So one of the things, as you think about this buyer's journey and, okay, now you decide what you want to talk about, and maybe you think you want to go into mortgage loans, what you want to try to do is answer questions. And the better you can answer the questions that people are asking with creative, informational, educational content that's not really positioned as salesy, schmalesy stuff, then the better chance that people are going to read that because they don't feel that they're being sold to, and they're going to respect the fact that you're educating them as opposed to just feeling like you're just trying to sell them a mortgage. So one of the tools that I really like to use, and the gentleman that's going to show up, if you have ever seen me, people have said this is what I'm going to look like in the next 10 years, which is kind of a running joke because I think we go to the same hairdresser. But if you go to answerthepublic.com, this is a website where you can enter a search term. And what it does is it goes through, and hopefully the video is coming through, but you can see I typed in the word mortgage loans. And so what Answer the Public does, and you could put in commercial loans, online banking, rewards checking, whatever the case is, but I've gone to Answer the Public and I've said, tell me what sorts of questions people are asking about the word or the term mortgage loans. So this platform goes out and grabs questions, prepositions, comparisons, and it generates these wonderful word wheels that we can go into, and it shows all of these different search phrases. And as you scroll through the list of all of these different search phrases, which are questions that people are typing into Google and other search engines, every single one of these is an active hyperlink that will take you directly to Google. So if I type on, I can click on mortgage loans for first-time buyers. This takes me, opens up a Google, it does that inquiry for me. I can see which businesses are actually advertising, Quicken Loans, State Farm. I can get instant answers. I can see who's ranking organically. I can see how they're answering that question for first-time home buyers. So I can browse all of these. I can take this data and I can export it as a CSV file, and I can geek out in Microsoft Excel if I wanted to. But imagine if you spent some time picking out what are the key things that you want to answer questions and be seen as a resource for. If you're a mortgage lender, you go into the system, you create a file, you find 12 questions that you could answer. Now you've got one blog post for every month of the year, and you've been able to get the questions that people are asking. You can get information about who's actually paying to advertise to get in front of those people. Those are the people that are trying to steal your lunch. And you can see who's ranking organically in Google that Google thinks is a great source of information. You can click on those. You can read the articles. And, you know, oftentimes you'll find that not every single one of those results is really providing helpful, relevant educational information. So if you can kind of overcome that and be a better trusted source of information over time, as you do this for mortgage loans, business accounts, commercial loans, wire transfers, anything that you want to be known for, this is a really great tool that you can use just to spark some ideas of some questions that you should be answering in the information that you're preparing for your audience. The other thing that you can take a look at, and Google, we have to be nice to them because they're the all-knowing, omnipotent entity that we all bow down to, and they're probably listening to this webinar right now for sure. But Google has a service called Google Trends. If you go to trends.google.com, this is all of the data that Google has captured about search terms, topics. And so you can see what I've done here is for my home state of Michigan, I've gone through and I've typed in, you know, mortgage, mortgage loan, mortgage rates, home loan, because those are all variants of the mortgage process. And I've segmented this down just for the state of Michigan. I can go Illinois, I can do Midwest, I can do the entire United States. And I've gone through and I've said, let's just look at trends over the last 5 years. I can isolate that for 90 days, 12 months. Or go all the way back to 2004 if I wanted to. And what this is doing is it's giving me a graph that shows me what the search activity is. So if I'm structuring content that I want to share and answer questions to be perceived as relevant, helpful, informational to facilitate the whole know me, like me, trust me process, you can see that there's spikes in activity as it relates to the term mortgage. And we get a little bit more specific with mortgage loan, mortgage rates. So you can see mortgage is a very broad term. So there's a lot of search activity. That also means that's going to be a very competitive area to rank for or to be seen for. There's a lot of noise there. We're going to have to really get KFC on the term mortgage to be able to cut through that clutter and develop our own 11 herbs and spices if we're going to get noticed in all of that activity. But as you look down below, we could actually take the word mortgage out and get a little bit better detail on mortgage loan, mortgage rates, and a home loan, which are all very correlated to one another. And you can see that there's a little bit of seasonality, but maybe not so much. But we can see when things are starting to peak in the summer or the spring, maybe that tells us when we want to ramp things up. And you could put other terms in here for other things that you also offer, maybe home equity loans, a HELOC, home equity line of credit. And just get ideas of when people are looking for that information. Because even though we're producing content that's not designed to sell. If people are online searching, we want to be educating them at that time, because then we can at least capture their eyeballs and bring them in and introduce them to us, so that when they do have an interest in buying or applying or actually doing business, we're going to be top of mind and we're going to have a shot. One of our partners is a company called SEMrush. Search Engine Marketing is what SEM stands for. So SEMrush is one of our global partners, and they recently did a pretty exhaustive study of content. So when we think about, okay, we've got content, and if we're going to write an article or we're going to answer a question through a traditional blog post, and we'll talk about some of the other ways, they did some analysis based off of some of the tools that they use to help determine how big of an article, what's the ideal size, how long does it take for somebody to actually optimize and really enhance an article. And so this may seem somewhat daunting, but they looked at over 22,000 articles. They said the average length of articles that are proving to be successful and showing up in top 10 search results are right around 800 words in average length. The people that are creating those are taking a little over 2 hours to write the article, research it, maybe spend some time grabbing some resources. There was an unfortunate instance where some plagiarism was detected, where you go out, you certainly don't want to just grab somebody's stuff. As much as I love and respect Chris Nichols, I would never go out and grab one of his articles and just reproduce that and say that I wrote it, even though it would make me look very intelligent. That's not respectful. You shouldn't do it in college. You shouldn't do it when you go into the real world. But it detected that there was actually some people looking to take shortcuts and plagiarize information that's already been created. Some of the other things that they looked at is when we think about like mortgage versus mortgage loan versus mortgage rates, you always want to make sure when you're producing content, if you're going to write that or produce articles or educational information, that you're writing for the human audience. So you don't want to make it ever look like you're trying to, the industry term is keyword stuffing. But ideally, they found that the term in the 800 words or more was reinforced either directly or through semantically related words. So mortgage loan is the same as home loan, is the same meaning, as you will, of buying a house or getting financed. So referencing that process during the article is an important element to Google recognizing that it's a great resource of information. The persistence of people writing specifically for desktop visitors, 95%, despite the fact that, you know, over half of search traffic now is taking place on a mobile device. Some of the banks that we work with, we've got access to their analytics. We're seeing, you know, 30, 40% of website traffic to the bank's website is coming from a mobile device, in addition to using the bank's mobile app. So making sure that the content that you're producing also is easily consumable on a mobile platform still seems to be getting missed by a lot of people. Yet I would suspect if I were to ask you or most other folks that were listening to this, when you read your content, I know the first place that I go is I hop on my phone. I flip through articles. I go into Flipboard. I look at my Google News. I go onto Facebook and get some news there, although that's starting to dwindle. But making sure that you're familiar with how you can leverage that distribution process on a mobile device. And then the last item that seems even a little bit more daunting is, while the average was about 800 words, ideally, and this is kind of a trend in the internet, where the quantity over quality is being flipped. It used to be post as many times as you can just to get noticed, because if somebody missed the first, the second, the third, they're going to catch the fourth one. Now what's happening with Facebook and other platforms is they're looking at quality over quantity. So rather than focusing on producing two or three blog posts a week, you want to maybe put out one or two really good, inclusive articles that really get into the nitty-gritty and educate people, because that's going to be seen as more valuable. So I've got a link there. You can get access to this report if you're interested, to that little bit.ly link for the SEMrush Content 19. But some really interesting insights as to what constitutes a good article if you really want to optimize it to be seen by Google and get that search engine volume, which, you know, you kind of start that process with the Answer the Public little ninja tool. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you a couple of examples of apps that I use on a regular basis and give you some detail on the Flipboard one. So two of the platforms that I use quite often are Flipboard, which is the red F there, which I use primarily as my source to find information that I want to share with others that's helpful, educational, entertaining, and not salesy, schmalesy. I think it's the second time I've said that term on today's show, so I apologize for that. And then Buffer is the other one, and that's a service that I use where I've got my business Facebook account, I've got my LinkedIn account, I've got Twitter, I've got some groups that I belong to that are all connected to that. So if I find an article that I think is relevant and I want to quickly share that across multiple platforms, I can leverage a tool like Buffer. I can schedule when that information goes. I've been presenting in front of an audience and they've asked questions. You're up there talking, but I just noticed that you tweeted something 5 minutes ago. How are you doing that? And I'm using tools like Buffer. One of the things when you start realizing, and if you were to ask Tim or Chris or any of the other executives that are in the space, making technology work for you instead of you working for technology is going to be a critical element of your long-term success. If you feel that everything has to be done manually, and this is one of the unconscious incompetencies that most individuals, they don't know what they don't know. They think they have to go directly to all these platforms and there's technologies out there that can make the process easier. But it's like anything else, you have to understand the why and the benefit that you're getting out of it before you jump into the technology, or it just doesn't make sense because then you're not going to be convinced as to the value that you're bringing to the table. So those are two apps that you can use. They're both available for free, and I would encourage you to pull them down. I probably should provide my standard technology disclaimer for any of the banking events. If you're using a bank-owned or managed electronic device, please check with your IT department first before downloading and installing any applications or software. I don't want to get anybody in trouble for violating a privacy or a security violation and getting myself in trouble. But on personal devices, certainly have at it. You can go nuts. But here's an example specifically of how I used Flipboard to gain some visibility through LinkedIn in particular, and how I'm able to measure and track the effectiveness of that over time. So if I go into Flipboard, I think about the things that the audience that I'm interested in influencing might be interested in. So pretend I'm a community bank, community banker that's serving small businesses. And if I'm working with a lot of small businesses, I think of the key phrases or the things that small business owners would like to learn more about. Not loans and financing, but they want to be successful. They want to understand the challenges of being an entrepreneur. Business, how do I use LinkedIn? So you can see all of these different areas that small business owners might be interested in. So you can take that, go out to Flipboard, and you can create a free account that you can then synchronize with your computer, you can synchronize with your tablet, you can synchronize with your mobile device, so all of your information remains available to you as you're bopping around these different platforms. And you can type in, and I've just started with the word success. So who out there doesn't want to be successful? Probably not very many of us. So as I'm browsing through Flipboard on a Sunday afternoon, I see this article from Inc. Magazine. And Flipboard goes out and it scours the internet for Inc. Magazine, Forbes, all sorts of very reputable, high quality sites that have news information. And it basically is your little digital secretary that grabs content for you. And so I've been able to be presented with this article from Inc. Magazine, 5 things successful people do every Sunday. So of course it's a Sunday afternoon, I'm reading this article. Here's this article from Inc. Magazine, which is a pretty well-known trusted source of information. So I click on it and I visit Inc. Magazine. I read the article, I go through 5 things, I catch something that kind of makes me chuckle a little bit, but I take the actual URL here. So inkmagazine.com/AndrewThomas. I copy that, and then I jump over into LinkedIn, and I just paste the link. It pulls in a preview, and then I start typing my description. I want to always just share a little insight as to why I'm sharing this information, with my audience. I could have just posted the link and said submit, but that's losing an opportunity to give the people that are following me on LinkedIn a little bit of information as to why I'm sharing this and what they might be able to get out of it. So in my article, before I go ahead and click on post, I say, how's your Sunday going? According to this article from Inc. Magazine, here's five things you should be doing today and every Sunday. If you're reading this today, you've already failed at number four. And then I throw a little winky face in there, and there's the link. So now when you read this, you're kind of like, I wonder what number four is. Well, number four is successful people don't get on technology on a Sunday. They disconnect. They spend time with their family. They spend time with friends. They exercise. They do something other than being on technology. So how ironic is it that I'm sharing this post on a Sunday that tells people that you shouldn't be on technology? But I played a joke. I've gone through within the actual post settings. You can see that I've actually connected my Twitter account to LinkedIn. And so I know that when I post this to LinkedIn, it also goes out to Twitter. So I'm capturing two different audiences, gives me an opportunity to share that information in another spot, which is great because now I'm cross-posting. And then I can spend some time, let it percolate, and then I can come back and I can see, well, this article in literally 5 minutes on a Sunday afternoon generated me over 320 views. And if I were to go back and pull the report today, I'm sure it'd even be higher than this. But that quick little post that I did on a Sunday afternoon gained me exposure to over 325 other individuals on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn gives me the ability to have some analytics on what this post does. So I can go in and I can see, well, there's obviously some banks here. Maybe some of them might be my customers. Some of them might be schools that I'm teaching at. Some of them might be prospects. I can see what level of seniority, so CEOs and executive directors, if I'm interested in selling a business loan to those folks and those are the people that are looking at my information, that's probably the audience that I want to see paying attention to me. And then I can go in and I can take a look at my geographic area. If I'm a community bank, I probably am going to want to see that area pretty tight. So I'm not going to want to see stuff all over the country. But you can see I've got a little bit of views in Nashville. I've got New York City. I've got Columbus and Chicago. So because I speak a lot of places around the country, getting a little bit greater exposure is typical. But now I can take a look at this and then I can spend time analyzing other articles and I can look at things like what types of topics are people interested in. If I talk about success, maybe that's 300, 350, 275. If I start talking about social media, maybe that drops because now people are thinking that as a digital marketer, I'm trying to sell them social media stuff. So then I go back to, okay, what other things like success can I talk about? Entrepreneurialism, business strategy, maybe some tips on fitness. Most people that are running a business do a lot of time spending time on their business, but maybe they let their health slip a little bit. So how can you fit in a quick workout while making sure that your business is successful? So you can test all of those things to find out what key phrases, what topics, maybe even what time of day might work better for you. And then over time, you're going to get much better at refining that message and making sure that you're sharing the right information to the right people at the right times. So one of the last slides that I've got here is a list of tools that you can use to help you source ideas and information if you want to create content. Whether that's image or video, and then some of the scheduling tools. So we've talked about Flipboard. Nuzzle is another great platform that you can connect to all of your social channels, and that helps you see what the connections that you're connected to are sharing. So I can connect my LinkedIn account to Nuzzle, and that will go in and say, hey, a lot of your connections on LinkedIn are talking about this particular topic. And I just happen to be connected to a lot of really smart bankers and folks that are connected to the banking industry. So if I start recognizing that there seems to be a lot of chatter going on from my connections about a particular topic, I may want to interject. I might want to share some knowledge on that. I might want to think about, is there a way that I can serve that topic with a product or a service to make myself relevant? And then some of the image video creation tools, some really interesting ways to be able to create images, to be able to create quick little simple videos, Just different ways that you can tell your story beyond just posting content and using text. And then I've talked about Buffer, a couple of the other platforms that allow you to schedule posts and interact a little bit on a more dynamic basis. Hootsuite is another platform that I use that has a nice little dashboard capability where you can manage multiple accounts. And even TweetDeck, which was acquired by Twitter a few years ago, is a interesting and kind of a more convenient way of interacting with your Twitter account. So key takeaway in all of this, regardless of what platform you choose, regardless of, you know, what you decide, focus on providing information that's educational and informative. Don't just focus on bank products and services. Don't talk about yourself. Don't talk about how awesome your bank is and we've been around for 100 years and our customer service. People like to see posts about people that work at the bank if it focuses on them. So if I've got an employee that just celebrated 30 years with the bank, rather than focus on the stuff that they do at the bank, been a lender and they provide customer service, focus on the human side that's educational and informative about the person. Be transparent. Because people don't want to be sold to, whether it's bank products or automobiles or legal services. They want to be educated. They want to be informed. And if you position yourself as that trusted source, as that banker that knows a lot of stuff about a lot of things, then the products and services opportunities will eventually come your way. So with that, here's how you can get in touch with me. I love talking to folks. I love connecting online. I do a reoccurring webinar show as well called the Banker Education Series, a weekly webinar show, just lots of different ways that we can connect. I would love to keep in touch. So with that, any questions, closing thoughts? What do you think, Mr. Hubbard?
Yeah, a couple of things. I really like, and I remember that Sunday post because I saw it and then reposted it. And one of the things that I like to do, and you probably do this too, is I'll look for who likes the article and I'll click on all the likes and I'll go through to see who is not connection already. And I'll click on that and I'll say, hey, I noticed you like my post. Be my privilege if we would connect. And that really does help. I really like your idea also of doing some analytics around this. And I think this is where marketing can be a great partner. I find that when I post articles on coaching, different things like that, something around coaching, I'll get 1,500 or a couple thousand looks. There are other subjects that don't really cut it as much, and I might get 200 or 300, maybe 500. So over time, I've looked at, okay, these are going to be really good. These are good posts. I also think that bankers make a big mistake in not posting on the weekend. I know you do, and I do. I get a lot of looks from articles Yep. that I post on the weekend. Final question. What, in your opinion, are the best times to post? And how often should I be posting on LinkedIn?
Sure. Yep. I think a lot of it is going to be based off of trial and error I've read the number of articles that say Wednesdays are the best time to post. And then you go to the internet and you do a search and then all of a sudden it says, you know, Saturday afternoons are the best time to post. So it really just depends on, you know, the industry because there's no consistent. I think what a lot of times you're going to see is, let's say you're interested in going after executives and key decision makers and organizations. Those are typically the early birds that get up early to get the worm. And I know you're an early riser. I do the same. But being present, sharing information. So when that executive gets out of bed, they do their workout, they grab their coffee, they hop online, you have an opportunity to share fresh new content to them that's going to cut through the clutter. And they're going to see that information. I think don't discredit the weekend element and making sure that, you know, there are people that sometimes that's when they get caught up on work, Saturday mornings, maybe Saturday afternoon, Sunday when they're watching the game, in between the commercials, they're checking email and browsing, you know, social media. understand your target audience. You and I both work a lot in the financial services space, and unfortunately, despite our efforts to try to get this to change, a lot of banks have blocked social media on the bank network, so they can't get access to LinkedIn or to Facebook or to Twitter. And while you can sneak a peek on your mobile device, being able to get somebody to actively engage with you in an organization that's blocked that technology is maybe not an easy thing to do during the 9-to-5. So you might have to look outside, into the other areas. So I would say early mornings. I don't know if there's a particular day of the week that really resonates more so than others. Probably Fridays, most people are checked out, especially later in the day. Monday's getting started. But a lot of it really is going to be testing and trying to, figure out what works for you. Twitter gives you some interesting statistics through Twitter Analytics. I've shown you here how you can go in and you can look at post analytics directly on LinkedIn itself. You may have to do some trial and error over a several month period if you really want to get serious at this, just to see what might work best for you and the audience that you're trying to influence and really be a part of.
Want more of Eric Cook? Done. Eric will be back with us for another 10 minutes program a little bit later on to talk about video marketing, one of the hottest topics in sales and marketing for 2019 and certainly going forward. Want to see Eric? Well, he's everywhere. He speaks at all these banking conferences and he's wonderful, and yet there's even more excitement. I'm thrilled to let you know that he's agreed to join our faculty for the second year of GSB Sales and Marketing School. Now, you'll be able to see Eric and myself and Tom Hirschberger and others at Madison, Wisconsin at the Fluno Center from September 29th to October 4th, 2019. Now, you want to get to Eric on LinkedIn? Connect with him. He'd love to do that. And if you have a need for something digital, Eric can be reached at eric@poweredbywsi.com. This is Jack Hubbard, Chief Experience Officer of St. Meyer & Hubbard. Thanks for listening to this 10 Minutes With, and we'll catch you on the next one.